I'm Kate Remington, and I'm talking with Rich Vreeland today. I'm so glad you're here, or at least here via Skype, Rich. It's really great to have a chance to talk with you.
Yeah, happy to be here.
You know, and for sure, I'd love to talk with you about Fez and your really creepy score for It Follows. But wow, right now, I'm just so excited about your soundtrack for Hyper Light Drifter. It's just, it's an incredible score. And so congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you.
You know, I'm so curious about the whole process of having basically infinite sounds to work with all of your equipment, all of the software that you use. And so maybe you could just start us off by describing a little bit about what the process is, about how you narrow down having, you know, access to, well, in computer terms, millions of colors to what ends up being in the music.
Yeah, definitely. The possibility space can quickly become daunting. And so my process a lot of times is to try to narrow that down, to try to narrow the palette down as quickly as possible. And so, you know, that process takes on many different shapes and forms depending on the context, not only what the project is, but also within the project, you know, for different sort of applications. There might be a different sandbox, if you will, that I'm creating. I mean, you know, a lot, with Hyperlight Drifter, you know, initially it was, you know, having a lot of just hanging out a whole lot with the team, especially Alex, who's the creative director, and Casey, who did a lot of the world building, and talking to those guys a whole lot about the story of the game and the characters and the world, and getting a feel for that stuff, getting a feel for the structure of the game, you know how the game would be played, you know, the sort of locations that you're going to, all those sorts of things. And then slowly, you know, I take notes and I'll write down a bunch of different ideas about, you know, overarching concepts, things, how things might work. And then usually most of those ideas don't work because they're too idealistic, and I end up with some sort of amalgam of the various simpler ideas that are easier to wrap my head around.
Well, a great example of how things got really simplified is apparently you had played a piano phrase melody for Alex, and you thought it would make a great theme, but he realized that in fact all you needed were like the three of the chords out of that for the theme to just sort of really set the mood for the game.
Yeah. Did you read that somewhere?
I did. I can't remember where. Probably on your website or somewhere. But I think it really kind of illustrates that process of starting with something that's really elaborate and ambitious, and then sort of scaling it down to what's actually feasible.
Yeah, for sure. And it's really great to have a creative director who, you know, someone like Alex, who has a really strong vision of what they want, someone to talk to. And I think there was a bit of a process for me where early on in the project, I had a lot of personal goals that I was trying to achieve with this game. You know, I wanted to write more motivic type music, have more recurring themes. And I also wanted to write these longer, more sort of acrobatic through composed pieces. And I thought that I could make that kind of work within the context of the game. But along the way, I kind of found that, well, there's actually one particular moment that kind of, it was a enlightening moment about, you know, oh, this is what the music needs to be. We were putting together a demo for, I think it was for PAX maybe, like last year. And I needed to write a bunch of music in a pretty short time frame. And so in that sort of high intensity moment, I just had to sit down and write, and I ended up writing this music that eventually became the music for the South, the Gauntlet on the soundtrack.
Thank you.
And so that's made up of like 20, 22 layers that all, you know, all are operating at the same tempo and are all pretty much the same length. And so I just had to kind of write in this very kind of shorter form where all the tracks are shorter, and then I'm just creating variations on top of that. And that turned out to work really well for the game, given, you know, how long the player is in different areas and how they're moving around the world. That worked much better than writing like a 6-minute piece of music and expecting it to feel good at, you know, most of the time. When you have shorter pieces, you know, it gives you more flexibility about changing how those pieces feel based on what's going on in the game. So that turned out to be a really good direction for the music, and that ended up influencing a lot of the things that I did after that.
Well, it's got to be a real challenge because you can't obviously control what the player is doing, and the music really does have to change moment to moment practically depending on where the player is, and especially with this game because the movement is really fast with the little warping, and you can get to a completely different place really quickly. So it sounds like you've totally nailed it. And the other thing that's interesting is that there are times when the music just goes away and you're just left to explore kind of on your own, which was also a good choice, I think.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I mean, that's something that I definitely try to incorporate into these sorts of games that have an exploration element to them. I think there are times where you need a break, and sometimes the easiest way to make a transition from one space to another is to have the music kind of wither away to and then you just hear the ambience kind of shifting before you move into a new space. You know, one of the clearest places where the music kind of dies and then, you know, you're given a moment, like a beat, before the music picks up again is at the end of the, you know, when you're leaving the central town and there's the four cardinal directions, there's like a buffer area leaving the town in any of the four directions before you would be entering like the north section or the west section or whatever. So when you get to the end of that buffer area, there's in any of the four directions, there's a little bit of a break where the music kind of recedes and you just get some nice ambience to kind of yeah, there's just something about us you know, silence that just adds, I feel like it adds a lot to the experience, the
Yeah,
music.
and it certainly tones down the fatigue from listening to this sort of steady background music too.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that's one of my biggest pet peeves with game music is that sometimes there's a tendency to just wallpaper the entire game with music, and that can be really tough.
Not only that, then you've got to come up with what, like 25 hours of music. So
Tons of music, yeah.
Since each one of the areas has a completely different character, I love that there's snow in the north and rain, and the eastern area is just stunningly beautiful. Did you have to really consciously decide what the sound or the music was going to be for each one of those areas?
Oh yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely. And you know, in kind of the world building and the story background that Casey and Alex came up with, you know, each one of those areas has a certain backstory and a certain sort of theme, like a concept. And so those all came into play when thinking about, you know, how the music would be, you know, what the music would be like. And but at the same time, you know, in a lot of cases, I'll have all these thematic ideas and I'll forget to implement them. When the time comes to actually write, I'll just sit down and play that area or look at that area or whatever, and just get a feel for what that area is supposed to feel like. And I'll just go with my instincts about you know, the kind of energy and the kind of vibe that area is evoking. And it's not always an immediate process. A lot of times, you know, we had to change stuff, or I would towards the end of the project, I had to start getting a lot less precious about the work I was doing and say to myself, you know, it doesn't have to be perfect. I just have to write something and put it in the game and see how it works and work go from there, because it was starting to become really overwhelming because it's such a huge game.
It's a real old school kind of game, too. I mean, in Fez, the worst thing that can happen is you fall off a ledge, but with this, you've got actual enemies to deal with and bosses, and was that a new experience for you, writing music to kind of incorporate all of those pieces of the world too?
Yeah, it's funny to say. I mean, having worked on games for like 10 years, but I haven't done a lot of soundtracks where you're like fighting people. So that was interesting. You know, I had to account for that. So there's certainly the music, a lot of the tracks kind of start in this sort of more calm exploration type mode, and then there are more intense layers of that music that need to kind of capture the intensity and the emotion of fighting a bunch of enemies. And then of course there are bosses, so I had to write boss music, which is fun and very difficult. Sometimes it comes together really quickly, and other times it can take quite a while to kind of get it just right.
were there games that you went back to play for like research? Like, here's how they did the music for the bosses in Super Metroid or anything like that?
No, not really. I just kind of went with my gut instinct. And if I was ever struggling, you know, I would talk to Alex, and Alex had plenty of ideas. And sometimes, you know, he would send me like a track from a game or something. I remember I was working on the West and trying to figure out what to do for the West boss. And he kind of gave me a little bit of backstory about that character. And he equated him to this wolf that you fight in Dark Souls that has a giant sword. And so, you know, I went and checked that out and felt like I understood that better.
That is one of the saddest stories in Dark Souls. When you finally get to where this warrior is, it's just heartbreaking. And there's a real sad quality to Hyper Light Drifter, too. And it's very mysterious. And I think you reflected that really well in your music, too.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, that character, the West boss, is supposed to be kind of this sad, sad sack of a person. So, you know, I tried to capture some of that in that particular piece of music.
Thank you. The whole world in Hyperlight has such a mysterious quality to it. First of all, because we really don't know what the story is or what the backstory is with the Drifter or what's going on, why it is that he's sick and leaving little pools of blood when he gets hurt. And your music, I think, really kind of helps build up that mystery and again, you know, the sadness of the world. Were there any composers, you know, even classical composers that you were kind of looking at for influence?
Yeah, I think just intuitively I was, you know, I'd be sitting down at the piano and coming up with ideas, and the kind of colors that I was using and stuff were definitely inspired by, you know, people like Debussy and Ravel and Rachmaninoff. And, you know, just trying to come up with these kind of moods that were kind of had a constancy to them that were evocative, but also maybe a little hard to pinpoint, mm-hmm. to kind of give it that ethereal quality.
Yeah, no, I can totally hear that, especially in like the piano version of the theme, the Panacea. There's a lot. I could hear a lot of Ravel in that, and yet it's so simple too. So it's not, you know, elaborate. Oh my gosh, you should be just so sad right here, but I think there's a sadness in its simplicity, maybe.
Sure. Yeah. And I think part of that is just my own limitations as a piano player. But I think it works because it makes the music more accessible to be simpler.
And I'm also, I was noticing some of the sounds from It Follows, your film score, seems like they kind of crept into this score too, because there are some really menacing moments in the music that were kind of similar to It Follows.
Yeah, I think over the last couple of years, I've been kind of pushing the dark stuff more. When it feels appropriate. I mean, I think in Fez there's some really dark stuff, and then when I did The Florist Jelly, there's some really dark stuff in that, and then of course It Follows really pushed that to the edge, and so I think that experience maybe helped me feel a little bit more comfortable with that sort of stuff, and so like the final boss music is really sort of has a demonic kind of insane quality to it, which was a fun, you know, it's a fun palette to go back to. I think there's definitely a kind of an It Follows sort of vibe to that music. And, you know, in some ways, there's a little bit of a similarity between Hyperlight and It Follows, just in that there's this really strong psychological aspect where I think, in a similar fashion, you know, that the Drifter character is, it seems like the Drifter character is, like, hallucinating and having these sort of visions and, you know, kind of the stuff that's, like, haunting him.
I'm really curious about how it is that you came to really just love working in this medium. I mean, you were a guitarist and your mom was a really good piano player. And did it come from playing games with these kinds of soundtracks? Or what was it that drew you to these really synth kind of chiptunes type sounds?
Well, I mean, I definitely played games growing up. And so that was in my head. But I didn't really put it together to do this kind of stuff until I kind of stumbled into it as a budding guitar player. I was trying to do. I mean, when I first started doing guitar and started writing some songs, I was also getting into like video game cover music. But a lot of that stuff was like rock. It was rock type stuff. Like Metroid Metal and things like that. And through that experience, I kind of discovered that there are people that were doing chiptunes. They were doing, they were taking, like, you know, the old game sounds and writing new music with it. And that kind of blew my mind, because at that time I had never heard anything like that before, and I didn't even know that was possible. So I think the notion that I could write music that sounded like the music that I heard as a kid was really kind of exciting. And in addition to that, the creative process for making music in that form, especially in the beginning when I thought, oh, chiptunes, it's just, you know, you just use this one really simple sound for everything and that's what it sounds like, that really simplified the process of taking my ideas that I would write on guitar or whatever and getting them out in some sort of listenable capacity. Because before that, I would get really caught up in trying to make a band recording with all the different parts and, you know, have it sound good. So chiptunes really sort of helped me expedite my ideas and get them out quickly.
Oh, that's so cool. Well, and I know one of your early, maybe your very earliest game soundtrack was for an old cell phone. And so that must have been like really great practice and really great introduction to being really economical with your music.
Yeah, I mean, I think at that point, actually, I had already been doing chiptune stuff. And I was using guitar tablature software that did, like, you could put all kinds of MIDI instruments into it and stuff. So I was already kind of dabbling with arranging for different parts. And then that opportunity came along to do these really kind of weird MIDI type work, like MIDI sound effects and MIDI music. So in some ways it wasn't that, I mean, I did some music and sound effects for a game. So that was very sort of narrow, but a lot of the work that I did for that company was, I kind of just felt like I was doing me, which was great. And then I think over time I started to develop more of a sense for doing very specific work, so that I could, you know, get into doing commissions and doing custom music for people.
What's really interesting to me is your cover of a Chopin prelude in Fez. That was just such a surprise to hear after all of the other amazing music through the game. And again, it happens in a really poignant moment. And I'm sure part of the reason why I felt so sad was because, you know, the game is over and I missed it. But tell me a little bit about the process of how you made your Chopin remix for Fez.
So that was Phil's idea to use a classical piece for that ending. And he wanted to use Moonlight Sonata. And I thought that was a little overplayed. So I thought this piece worked a little bit better. And then the actual way that we did it, I'm not a terribly good piano player. I found a performance of the piece on YouTube, and I beat mapped the performance to a MIDI file that someone had put together, just a kind of a straight robotic MIDI file of the notes, you know, with some dynamics in it of the piece. So I beat mapped that to a human performance to give it kind of a fluid quality, and then from there I kind of tweaked different parts to my liking, as far as, you know, dynamics and instrumentation, and the timing is a little, you know, I changed up the timing a little bit, and then of course the piece is it's a little shorter than the original prelude.
Thank you.
It was a weird piece to work on because I didn't, you know, obviously being an arrangement, I didn't write anything new, but I also didn't perform anything really. It was just a lot of tweaking, like a lot of post-production type work.
Huh, well, you had me fooled. I totally thought that was you playing the piano and then just kind of messing with it. And it like I said, it fits perfectly at the end of the game. And then you brought in a bunch of composers to do remixes of all the music for Fez. So that must have been a fun project.
That was fun. That was interesting because I didn't expect, I think I reached out to about 40 people thinking, or 50, maybe 50 people thinking, oh, you know, maybe I'll get like 10 or 15 submissions. And instead, almost everyone I asked did a remix. So I had this like massive pile of remixes. And I tried as best as I could to kind of direct steer people towards certain tracks so that we wouldn't have too many of the same track. But what ended up happening is that people who I didn't even ask were like sending me remixes. Like, oh, check this out. And then a lot of them were really good. Unfortunately, a lot of them were adventure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I had... I did one side. I did one remix record, which I was pretty happy with. When I got like 40 remixes, I was like, I can't do a single. I have to split this up somehow so that it's listenable. Because I didn't want to just put out like, you know, a 300-minute album. it'd be so hard to listen to that straight through. So I split it up into two. And then in the second one, I just had too many adventure remixes. I had like seven of them or something. So I just kind of took a – I included one or two of them in the body of the album, and then, like, the rest I kind of just put at the end as, like, bonus material because I just couldn't – I couldn't figure out – like, I get – when I do a compilation, and I had experience doing compilations because I ran a net label for about 5 years. So I would – you know, a lot of times I would be the one taking all the tracks that people submitted, and I would be creating the structure of the album. And so I'm thinking about dynamic, I'm thinking about the flow of the album, I'm thinking about, you know, the key, like the key that one song ends in and the key that the next song begins in. All these sorts of things to make the experience of listening to the album feel like a cohesive one. And so I was doing the same thing with the Fez remix albums. And, you know, I did the best that I could to kind of give those albums a certain sort of narrative feel to them and a certain flow. And I think for the most part, it worked out really well. It was just those I had too many tracks, and a couple of them I just had to put at the end as like, oh, these don't really count, you know, like they're don't think about these as part of the structure. They're like bonus. This is bonus material.
Well, what I loved about it was that, you know, everybody who did it, like Jim Guthrie and the composer for Ilo Milo, I mean, they brought their own sensibility to the pieces. And so it was almost like, well, okay, if Jim Guthrie had written the soundtrack for Fez, it would sound like this. So it was a neat experience to listen to, really.
Yeah, totally. It was really exciting to get those remixes and to hear people, you know, a lot of people that I know personally and you know, really like their music, to hear their sort of take on some of the ideas that I had come up with.
there are so many games that you've worked on, including Fez and now Hyper Light Drifter and Mini Metro. And I know in the works you've got another game called Migakure, which I've seen at PAX a couple times. All of these have such complex mechanics, and some of them kind of like even, I don't know, kind of warp your brain, especially Migakure, because you're doing puzzles in like four dimensions. And I would just love to know if that's a kind of gameplay that you're like really drawn to because of the way you write music.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a complexity, but I also feel like there's a simplicity to those games on the surface, or there's something really special about the experience of playing the game. You know, I think Mini Metro, the experience, is there's a lot of strategy and a lot of thinking that goes into playing it, but it also has a Zen sort of quality. And I found that it was very easy to just kind of fall into it intuitively and get lost in it. And so I really liked that experience. And I also felt like there's kind of an educational component, that is maybe a little hard to put my finger on exactly what that is, but it did feel that way. And so, the actual music creation, the goal was to make it so that the music felt kind of effortless and kind of just fit in with the experience as very Zen and minimalistic. But then, of course, the actual process of designing the music and making it work was very, very complex. And I had to take into account a lot of different factors about how the system operates, all the different pieces, how they work together. And so it was this like really, really fulfilling design challenge for me to try to create this, this monolithic kind of creature that just spews out music procedurally. I think Migakure is going to be similar. You know, the underlying systems that we're working on are definitely complex, and the game is obviously very complex. But I think as a player, you can have a very sort of Zen experience playing that game, where you don't ever really fully comprehend what you're doing or what the mechanic is. But there's a feel to it. There's like a, you know, learning by association sort of feel where, over time, you can predictably make the right choices and solve puzzles, and you don't even know what you're doing. Like, you don't even know why. And to me, that's just such a fascinating experience to have, where it's like magic almost. It's very, very unusual.
To me, composing is magic. I mean, it's just I can draw a little bit. I can write, but getting music out of my head on paper is just really magical. And I think what's so cool about Fez and Mini Metro is almost inadvertently the player is kind of creating the music too, because of the choices that they make and where they go and the timing for like adding lines and stations, especially in Mini Metro. So that's a neat way to involve the player too.
Yeah, I really like that sort of interaction, and that was a really big concern with Mini Metro. Part of the reason that I was asked to work on that was because of this game I made called January, where you walk around and you lick snowflakes and they generate music, and so the player has a lot of control over how the music feels, because the kind of the trigger for playing musical notes is your tongue touching a snowflake. And so with Mini Metro, I wanted to create a similar sort of system, but have it be tied to rhythm more so. And so the system is there's a lot of variation in the system, but it's also very controlled, so that as a player, hopefully you feel like the system is, first of all, giving you useful feedback about what you're doing. That was the most important goal with the system. And then the secondary goal was that it sounds good and that it's interesting, and that, you know, as it evolves, you feel like you, maybe as a player, you're actually making musical contributions. And I think we were successful with that. I think there are a number of things that you can do to kind of jam, or like, you know, kind of play off of the game. Like, you can kind of drag lines around. You can solo different lines, and then obviously the decisions that you make change the soundtrack. So
that's really cool. I mean, it's such a really neat collaboration between the designers and the players. And oh man, Rich, I mean, I could just spend hours more talking with you, but I know you've got like a life and stuff to do. So, but I really, really appreciate you taking the time to talk just a little bit about your process and your music. It's been a lot of fun for me.
Oh, my pleasure. Yeah, I'm happy to talk about this stuff.